This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chris, or Quest, whatever you feel like calling me. Most of the people call me Quest when they meet me. The first question, I guess, is what are stories that in the community that you wish were being told? Well, when I look at it from my point of view, I think our community is bigger than what they portray about Philadelphia or North Philadelphia. I think North Philadelphia is so segregated because they break it down into like Brewery Town, Nice Town, Germantown, and it's like North Philly is actually all of that. You know, we're all of that. We're one big community. And when something goes on in one part of town, you hear about it just like it was around the corner from you. And I think they don't include the engagement that we have, like our how big North Philadelphia really is. They make it seem like it's this little pocket in the world, you know, to me. So that's what I think, you know, they don't say enough about North Philly itself as a whole, like how big North Philadelphia really is.
I'm Ma Quest, or Christinia, Chris, Chrissy, however, it doesn't matter. The first question, I am actually, I would like to see more stories about the heroes in the neighborhood, because we really do have a lot, and it's brushed under the rug, you know. The people that have been in the neighborhood before the people that are coming into the neighborhood, the ones that grew up there, lived there their whole lives, you know, they're actually the foundation of the neighborhood. And all of them aren't bad, but a lot of them have been labeled automatically just because of where they come from, where they are. You know, a lot of people look at North Philly as just being ghetto, or the trenches, as the kids call it. You know, it has a lot of, as he said, a lot of beauty to it. We've got, as you saw in the movie, drill teams, and we have a few community centers, and like the things that we do have available are pretty strong for us. Like we have this new place called Project Home. Their little doctor's office that they put in the neighborhood, you know, they help the homeless. They give them an opportunity to take showers once certain times a week, wash their clothes certain times a week, but that's not brought up, you know. But at the same time, it needs to be more done. Like I see that somewhere along the line, I think somebody heard my husband say that this has not been, you know, our hometown heroes haven't been spoken of a lot more. So I see on like on Channel 3 or whatever now a little bit, they've been trying to, because at one point he really did make his big point to the media that the media doesn't talk about the positive people and the positive things that happen. So recently I've been noticing that they've been trying to do that a little bit. They can try a little harder.
We get criticized before people actually come see what's going on. And I feel like being as though I live in the area, like, I don't know, I'm kind of used to it. So I feel like it's not as bad to me as it would be to somebody else that's new to the neighborhood. But, you know, you never know until you try.
And I came to North Philly. I grew up in Pittsburgh. Came to North Philly to go to Temple University. So the narrative, you know, that I got there during, like, freshman orientation is, like, do not go over there. It's scary. You're going to get shot. Even before I left home, it was like, you're going to Temple? You're going to get shot. And I've always been sort of skeptical of, you know, people saying, yeah, you know, here's a boundary. Be scared of those people. Because I've been labeled as, you know, whatever, doing punk rock stuff or whatever. So I kind of was a bit skeptical and was looking for ways to connect. And sort of before I even met these guys, started to connect in the community in North Philly, kind of crossing those boundaries that were imposed by, like, Temple's police force or whatever, and beautiful people playing kickball, you know, taking care of their kids, and so my lived experience was very different than, you know, that narrative that is also just perpetuated in the local news and all this. You hear about the scary, sad stuff, and you don't kind of hear about the fun, the beauty, and all of that. And so when I sort of was thinking about it more than just sort of hanging out, but in terms of storytelling, I was like, I want to reflect the layers of this and collaborate with the community, not me as like some random dude just imposing a narrative, but really, you know, wanted to bring some artistry to some storytelling, but to really facilitate their voices being reflected through, you know, any kind of creativity I could bring to it. So maybe the collaboration, you know, piece. I think we sort of talked about the narratives we're sick of. North Philly is scary, violent, and everyone there is a bad guy. Like, yeah, we're sick of that, you know, in terms of what we were doing here. And there's other narratives as well, and but along those lines. But in terms of the collaboration.
Ways that we collaborate in our neighborhood are like basic ways that most people collaborate. They talk to their neighbors. Like we communicate with our neighbors quite often. Without being said, a lot of, you know, in these days and times, social media kind of separates people, like separates blocks, separates neighborhoods where you don't want to really associate with your neighbor. But like we really do communicate with each other, and social media only plays a part, right? Like for the I kind of say the now generation, the instant gratification generation, the younger generation. They're the ones who are being taught, like, if I need the answer, I just have it on my phone. They don't talk to their parents as much as they should, but, you know, or talk to their neighbors as much as they should. But we do. We communicate a lot. We have so many, how can I say, you ever heard a story about the best place for guys to talk is to go to the barbershop? You know, you go to the barbershop and guys communicate. Now it's just the corner. You know, you go to the corner and just hang out, talk to the guys that stand on the corner. They're not necessarily drug dealers. They're just watching the neighborhood, just hanging out, doing what they do. We don't have a lot of community centers. We don't have a lot of swimming pools. We don't have a lot of libraries in these neighborhoods that we live in. But so everything is like word of mouth. We are social media. I am Google. We know when someone needs to know what's going on, and I happen to know, I happen to be outside a certain time and hours at night or whatever. Or Mr. Johnny's son is up to no good, and I know that I'm going to speak to Mr. Johnny in the morning, you know, about his son. Like, we communicate through, like regular, everyday, ordinary conversations, and that gets overlooked a lot, you know. And that's definitely a way that we communicate and collaborate. Also,
yeah, during this film, how that sort of, how do you see the, how the collaboration went?
Well, basically, during the process of making the film was the cool part. Like, just, like, everybody wanted to know what John was doing with his camera. That was number one. Like, this one guy just following us up and down the street, you know, kind of looked awkward at first. Well, even to us, it felt kind of weird, you know, just because it kind of brings out the inquisitive side of people. The younger people were following John, the older people, when they were asked questions like, what's going on? We were making a film. We did not know the film was going to be like it is, you know, and it's a Sundance Film Festival, the awards that we've received, Full Frame, True False Film Festivals, all these film festivals. It was great to actually tour the, I won't say the world, but I say United States, to see how other communities engage and how other people feel when they hear about North Philadelphia. You really do hear the strangest things about North Philadelphia. Like one time, one guy said they were talking about, they went to North Philadelphia and their car broke down right outside the Philadelphia Zoo. And they were scared to get out their car to call for help. And the phone booth was like a block away. You could see the phone booth, but they would run to the phone booth, make the phone call, run back to the car and lock themselves in their car. You know, so imagine hearing those type of stories, and they never live in North Philadelphia, but you live there every day. We're right there at Fairmount Park, so we could see all the beauty ourselves, you know, the animals. I mean, it's just like a lot of stuff just gets so much, so overlooked, and it's so sad how people judge other places. Even when we talk to, I'll say Republicans, you know, we talked to some Republicans when they saw the film, you know, they kind of opened up our eyes, and we kind of opened up their eyes. And we even heard some things like, we didn't know you were just like us. You know, you kind of get those things. Yeah, we vote. We go out, you know, we care, you know. You know, we wonder where our kids are going to go to school, right? Things like that. You know, it's just like, they think of North Philadelphia as just this terrible war zone. Actually, they think of Philadelphia in a whole is a terrible place sometimes. We labeled the fourth most impoverished city, you know, in the country or whatever. And I haven't seen that yet. Now, don't get me wrong, I've been on welfare, I've been trying to make it to the top, but I don't see like a million people homeless. I do see homeless people, but I don't see like the whole city like that. They label the whole city as being this impoverished thing. It's almost like they show the pictures, you know, when they show the pictures of Africa and they show the flies flying on the kids' faces, they don't show the inner cities of Africa. They don't show how people collaborate, how people get along. That was, you know, you get that kind of feel when you hear people talk about North Philadelphia.
We have these two different radio stations that we go to. Temple has WRTI, and my husband, you know, he's a co-host at WRD.
Sunday's at 8 o'clock.
So sometimes I'm there with him, you know, political conversations come up, you know, it gets deep sometimes. You know, apparently about two weeks ago, I wish I had went that night, but this really deep conversation happened about basically what we was talking about, how people, the impression people get about Philadelphia. You know, like one day I was at work and a African-American coworker and myself had a conversation which made us go to two other coworkers, who one's African and one is Jamaican. And we asked them, you know, what were you told about black people before you came to America? And they were basically told that we are lazy, violent freeloaders.
Right.
And that they should stay away from us as much as possible. But the thing is, nobody's the same. Everybody's raised differently. You know, there are people with the ghetto mentality as putting the wrong things in the minds of the people we wish they weren't. But then there are people who actually raise their kids right and instill, what's the word, morals and love into their kids. You know, like this one right here, she's our pride and joy, you know. She's the only one we had together, so you know she's rotten, spoiled rotten. Like, she's the baby of 13 kids. But that's where the beauty comes in at. That's when we found out how decent our neighbors were. Like, the love that they showed us when she came home from the hospital, it was so decent. Like, this little boy and some other kids begged me, can she go to the playground with them? I didn't want to say yes, but, you know, so give her some space. He's a little big guy. He said, I'll protect her, you know. We let her go anyway. When they came back, it was like the whole neighborhood walked her home.
Yeah. It's like a scene from a movie. Like, just imagine somebody coming over the hill, one kid, and then as they come further, you see this army behind her, you know. It was I don't know, it's like when the bonding moments that we have in North Philadelphia, they really go unspoken.
We get the... In the summertime, I know it's annoying that you can't get around all the blocks, you waste a lot of gas, but them block parties be fun. Like, we be doing our thing, and so you gotta get a trans pass or something, I guess, because we still gonna have our fun. But that's my favorite part of the year, when we start having our little cookouts and when the good things happen, because every once in a while, you know, there's a little negativity that go on. Like, yesterday was a crazy day for Philadelphia.
News, but five individual guys got shot in North Philadelphia. This was right around the corner from us. We were actually outside when it happened.
On the other side of it.
And they said it was like 15-year-olds that were doing the shooting. So how do we try to break this, you know, cycle that's going on? First of all, like I said, we need to stop being scared of our children. Like, you know, for those who have kids, you know, it's a time to say no. It's a time to say, I'm going to check your room whether you want me to or not. You know, I don't think we should, like, at one time, if I even told my mom, get out my face, I probably wouldn't even have a lip, you know? So, you know, and I learned from that, like, not saying that she would put her hands on me, but the threat alone, the glare in her eyes said, you know, okay.
I was scared God would hear me. Yeah. I wouldn't even, so I wouldn't even think like that, you know?
Well, we don't challenge our children. We give them as much leverage as we have when they haven't earned it yet. You know, and I think those things we need to, you know, reassess how we raise our children. The minute a child says, well, you can't hit me, I'm going to call DHS. Well, DHS allows you to hit your children to a certain degree. You know, so, you know, sometimes you might have to pull out the rule book to say, not necessarily, you know, but this is what I can do if I want to. You know, maybe that, you know, but we're not talking to our children. We're just letting them do what they want freely. And, you know, we give them too much technology at such an early age. You know, and it's a lot of things that goes on. Like, I know a 4-year-old with a cell phone better than mine right now, you know, and or you might have like that big TV in his room, you know, when like if you notice Isaiah, he has his little TV in his room, you know, the technology. Now, he is a video game freak. We let him play his video games when he's, you know, doing what he's supposed to. But Isaiah is a straight A student. He has he's excellent in math, you know, like it's like. You know, when you play with them in a smart way, and, you know, you got to, like, and when you set your boundaries and your rules, you really got to stick to it as far as these kids go, this new generation of children that we have. Because they really don't respect authority outside of their homes. And if we don't show them that we respect the neighbors, then they're not going to respect the neighbors. We can't really just, you know, because the kids really listen to our conversations. We don't send the children out the room anymore when we have conversations. Like back in the day when I was little, my parents started talking, we had to go all the way outside. They didn't want us to hear anything, whether it was good or bad, you know. But nowadays, the children is right there, and you're talking on the phone, talking about something detrimental or sad or whatever, and the children are going through the same emotions that you're going through without even you knowing it, because, yeah, we don't pay enough attention to what's going on in their world versus what we're doing in our world.
Yeah, and, like, we got all these video games, stuff that the kids play. We need to, I see that a lot of people don't enforce or reinforce the idea that this is not real. So maybe people aren't just on the right level, and maybe those people should not be allowed to play the game then, you know.
We let PJ play Saints Row. I don't know if you ever heard that game. That's like a really bad game. Like, but we didn't know what it was at first. Then we found out PJ was picking up whores and, you know, selling drugs. All this is on this video game. We didn't know, you know, honestly speaking. Like she's like, Dad, y'all let me play that game. We like, well, it's just a game till I started playing it. And I'm like, you were playing this? You know, but, you know, by God's grace, we talked to PJ a lot, and she saw a lot before our tragedy. So, like, you know, I was just happy to be fortunate to be saved by the bell on that one. But, like, if we really have to investigate these things, Fortnite is the biggest thing out right now. And you guys heard of Fortnite? Like, all the kids are playing Fortnite. You don't even have to play it. Just put the headphones on and listen to what they're saying over the line, the conversations that the kids are having with each other. You know, that'll let you decide 90% of the time whether these kids should be playing these games or not. You know, like, let them play the game, but just listen to it, because you can put the headphones on and listen, because it's an internet game. It's worldwide. You get all kinds of conversations, you know, and that's where, like, most of the danger lies, and, like, we are not engaging what the kids are really doing, or we don't understand what we're putting in their hands.
PJ, what are your thoughts in terms of this, like, collaborative storytelling, or even your just agenda of what you want folks to, like, take from this story that we told together, and maybe talk about that process and your hopes for that?
All right, so I feel like I feel like networking is like a big thing, and communication is the key, because communication. All right, so we just need, like, I don't know, for me, I got real big hopes of a real big community center, right? And they got like other stuff besides rapping, because it's more stuff than rapping and making beats and stuff. Like, stuff teaching people, like, we could teach people how to pay bills, like real life stuff. People don't know how to do that. That's why people really get stuck. It's like, it's no more reality. They don't teach us life skills. And it's like, I read this book, like, before, like, for my senior project called Fahrenheit 451. And then that's when, it's basically a book that's like, it's a altered world, a world where they burn books, so people don't read books, so we don't be smart. And they put, like, they give us stuff like technology and drugs and stuff, so we could, like, you know, interact with that to hide ourselves from reality. And I don't know, I just feel like that really, that book really hit me, because I be feeling like I'm what's that called?
Conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. And I think that, I feel like that was like, that made me look at this world like, dang, we kind of like that a little bit, because our phones, like, I don't know, I'm still somebody that's like, I'm a product of my environment a little bit. Like, I'm aware. I feel like I could change it because I'm aware. But being though I'm still here, and, like, I don't know, I still like stuff that's trending, and I can't help it sometimes. But it just, that's how it is. And I don't know, I just feel like we need, like, a lot of guidance and stuff, because people don't know, and they only do what they know and what they was taught. And I feel like that's where it all started, because when school, we go to school, they don't teach us that, them life skills. And most of the time, like, I feel like this go all the way back, like, in time, like, from, like, the crack epidemic. Like, we messed up, like, from, like, history. Like, some people can't help it, so I can't, like, it's not their fault. But, like, everybody, nobody's perfect. And, yeah, I don't know.
One thing I've heard, you know, you say is that you shouldn't be defined by what happened to you. And that's part of your personal story, but I think it's also part of like your message to others. Would you want to talk on that a little bit?
So, when I got shot, right, it was just weird because, I don't know, I got the weirdest questions, so I feel like I didn't hurt it all. So it's like, then when, I don't know, I took my prosthesis out because it felt uncomfortable, and then that's when, I don't know, I put my patch on it. Some people was like, you look mean, you look like a thug or something, for reals. And then that's when, I don't know, I feel like it was weird, like going in my job and stuff. Like, yeah, I just feel like I was just being judged, period. And people don't know me. So I just, it's just like that with a lot of people, though. They judge a book by its cover without getting to know them. And
I think storytelling is such a huge part of that. Like, right. If people know PJ's story, some people, you guys just got to experience it through this film. There's other ways to tell those stories. And then all of a sudden, a connection is a connection is forged. And there's understanding, and you get a sense of those layers as opposed to those snap judgments that are, you know, kind of our, you know, amphibian animal brain does to just survive. We make a snap judgment based on whatever. But it's like once you get to know someone's story and get to share yours, all of a sudden you can go deeper. And we're invested in each other's lives, and then we can take action in meaningful ways. And you know, I think about this idea that sort of social change needs to be preceded by narrative change. So really, these stories are life or death in a lot of ways. You know, the narrative of North Philly being just a place that is full of folks that are, you know, kind of scary, and it's depressing stories, and it's just a total disaster. Sadly, our president sort of reflects those narratives. Well, that actually affects people's lives, and also affects those narratives kind of go deep. They're imposed, but also they're internalized by the people that actually live there. And what if we can change that narrative? So it's like we're thinking about the beauty, the potential, the opportunity, and reflecting that, and then people can even see themselves as, you know, beautiful with opportunity and all of this, and then be able to live out of that. I think that can be really powerful. And so for me as a storyteller, a filmmaker, that's kind of my agenda. And it's like, how do you get to that? Well, I think, you know, you have to connect first. Without connection, whatever great idealistic ideas you have, if you're just imposing that on a community and just using that power and not including them and sharing that power, it's going to be problematic. And so I think you need to connect first. And you know, for us, it took, you know, 10 years. I don't know if it always has to be that way. Every single situation is different. But, you know, storytellers need to, you know, consider, like, is this my story to tell? And I would say the follow-up question that, well, am I connected? And it's okay if you're not connected right now, but get connected. And maybe your dream of telling the story gets you there. Find those stakeholders. Find those people that you connect with. And then go on a journey. You know, this started off as a photo project in 2006. I'd never made a documentary film before. It wasn't anywhere on my mind. I wanted to be a photographer. And then slowly things happened, and there were different ideas and checks and balances, and a lot of, you know, I think the core ingredients were dialogue, relationship, and what was it, collaboration. You know, like we had 2007, December, we had our first, you know, maybe a 10-minute cut, you know? Yeah, and it was like, we watched it, we did some screenings in small rooms like this, so they got to see themselves on screen, and we talked about, what are we doing? What's missing? You know? And so this sort of the editorial process was something we all did, and I wanted to bring my artistry to it, but also include the voices of the chief stakeholders, these guys who, this is their lives. They know, they're the experts on their own lives, so what are we missing here? What else do they want to reflect? And so we can go on from there, but maybe you guys, maybe there's some things that we've left out. If there are any, a couple of questions, then we could maybe, we'll break up into some small groups to just talk for a little bit more about sort of what you guys have going on, or, you know, other individual questions. And, you know, we're already intimate. We'll double that intimacy, you know, after that. But any questions from you guys about sort of anything we've talked about or you've experienced in the film?
You've mentioned that that parents don't exclude children from talking when they have conversation now. So I just wanted to ask PJ what you thought of your parents' conversation about, like, you growing up spending a lot of time with your dad versus your mom, like, when you saw that.
I feel like I don't know. Like, they both was in my life, period. Like, I don't know. I just feel like parents, they got two different needs. And I don't know. My dad, he told me he didn't even have a father in his life. His dad left early, and he actually was, like, learning from his uncles. I feel like I just took more from my dad because of, like, stuff that we, like. And, like, my mom, I don't know. My mom was more like a tomboy, so I ended up, like, I knew I was going to be on that side more. I don't know. Like, one point in time, like, it was funny. I'm not even going to lie. I really thought my mom was gay. Like, one day I came downstairs, and I'm like, Mom, you like girls, right? And then my friend was like, but she go out with your dad. But, yeah, it's like, I don't know. I grew up and, like, I don't know. Some people just like their self. Like, I'm just me. So, I don't know. I don't think that they really had a big influence on me being gay because being as though, you know, behind closed doors, you know, you can't stop nothing from that period. Like, if you got kids, when they leave you, it's different.
See, I didn't have time to get all dressed up and be all girly and stuff. You know, she's the youngest of 13 kids, and we took care of his mother for 6 years until she passed away. So, you know, life was, my plate was big. I didn't have time to go to the Nellery, go get my hair done, you know, and everybody in the house eat different. So the in-laws had one meal, the kids had one meal, he had a different meal, and I didn't even feel like eating by the time I finished feeding everybody. three-story, five-bedroom house.
Right. In the film, it does project, like, me being with PJ 90% of the time, but it really was like a 50-50 thing. Because, be honest, like, when Chris grabbed you by the hair and just sat you down, that was it. You was just stuck. Yeah, she's doing your hair. And mommy takes the longest to do hair. Am I right? She would drag her hair out, like, just in, or she's on her time when it comes to, like, asking her for things because she does so much, like she said. And when we say 13 children, like, a lot of these kids, like, a couple of, like, they were, like, from past relationships where, like, a guy was in a relationship and, like, I might have had a child with a young lady, but she might have had the child might have had another sibling from another father. But those kids still called me dad because that's how they saw me. And to this day, that's how they still see me.
And they call me mom.
Yeah, and they call him mom. Yeah. So, like, we were parenting outside of our own relationship with, you know. And the mothers are still involved, believe it or not. So it's like, it's almost like every man's dream, like, to have all the baby moms get along with each other, you know, and you can do whatever you want.
It's not really fairy tale and la la
land.
Right,
definitely not that.
You know,
but
we're cordial.
Right, it's cordial. That's what I mean. I don't mean in a sense, in that sense. I meant in a good sense where you can communicate with each other, where you can talk to each other. Like, if I had a problem or they had a problem, they would call us and say, can you talk to Johnny? Can you talk to Nadine?
Yeah.
You know, things like that. You know, so it was like a village raising the children. You know, it was not just us. Like, other people were involved. And, like, we have 22 grandchildren out of that, you know, that they call us grandpa, pop, and mama. 23 now. You're 23 now. You know,
it's only three girls.
Yeah, out of everybody. Yeah, so.
All boys.
So that worries us a lot now because the boys are coming up in this generation where everything's insane and trying to keep a hold of everybody and make sure the parents are doing right. Because everybody has the up and down waves. And teenage parents are, I can't believe I was a teenage parent. How did I make it through? You know, that's the part that amazes me. Because looking back and seeing my kids struggle, I just pat them on the back and be like, good job. You know, I if you need help, I'm there for you. But it's not too much I can say without trying to, I don't want to control your life, but I can only, like, give you advice. Like PJ said, like, she thought mommy was
gay.
Gay, yeah. She thought mommy was gay because mommy said, I don't never know the lingo. Excuse me if I don't ever get the lingo right, because I always talk to PJ about things and she explains things to me. You know, I'm still trying to get together, like in the film. You know, I thought it was either gay or not, you know. So it's a lot that I still have to learn. So, you know, forgive me if I ever, you know, seem out of character or say things that's inappropriate, because that's just me.
So then I wonder what other, like, realizations you might have had from, like, watching this or going through this experience. Like, if it changed your dynamic with each other, or, like, with your neighborhood, or, like, how has this impacted you in general?
To everybody, I'm PJ's mom now, you know. the reception has been positive, you know, for the most part. the beginning when I first saw it, the realization was how many people we lost since the movie started being filmed.
Right.
You know, in the beginning, the first 5 minutes, I burst into tears when I first seen it because my dad's there. He died like 2 days after she got shot. And his brother, he married us. He had a little while before that. So
11 months older than I am. So
yeah,
it's a lot that when we look at the film that change that we look at it says, okay, they're not here anymore. Doing a book cookout, the guy that was on a barbecue grill, Chuck, he passed away too. The guy that gave PJ hug PJ.
Yesterday, that was in the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the five people, they was in the studio rapping.
Right. Yeah. So when we watch the film, we see sadness sometimes, but we see joy too. But as far as it changing us, the cool part is it hasn't. Like, we're still the same people. The only thing is we got shirts, you know. Like, everybody wants a shirt. Like, our whole neighborhood wants a T-shirt, you know. They always buy the T-shirts and the hats and things like that.
Yeah. And then, like, some things didn't really change at all. Like, Price is still asking for his music.
Right.
And, like, he's doing good, you know. William, like you said, he's in remission. So life, he's a security guard now. He lost a little weight. The baby's 6 years old. And, you know, for him, he's like, I'm in a movie. Did you see my movie? And, you know, for him, it's like, it's way cool. Like, but the other grandbaby, he wish he was in it, but he was still in the belly, you know. The family, some people, you know, they're like, well, why wasn't I in it?
So much footage we couldn't use.
It's so many stories. We can only tell but so many stories inside one film. You know, and if we focus on everybody in the family, we're going to take about a month to show the film.
How many hours of footage you got?
There's all 400 some hours of footage.
Right.
And so you guys saw our TV cut, which was an hour and like 22 minutes.
Right.
So that's there's a lot of stuff you didn't see. So a lot of layers. And that's part of the filmmaking process is trying to figure out what's essential. Who are your essential people? And we wanted it to be intimate. And so we didn't want to have like 25 people. And then you're like, wait, was that guy or whatever? Right. We really want to make sure like these are the central folks. And you have William and Price. And they're the ones who kind of you really connect to. And sometimes when you add more characters or subjects into a film, it gets a bit more confusing for the viewer.
And you know, in one of the articles that somebody wrote on the story, they point out that they feel as though it's too many topics in the movie.
So. That was just like, there's so much we left out, but it's like...
So much, we had 22 puppies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, you take the footage, and so it's like you want to honor everyone's trust, and so we want to be really thoughtful. Like, every single cut, every single frame, you know, the film team, was thought about deeply. So we wouldn't just willy-nilly just throw the raw footage out there. But there's a lot of, you know, we use, like, voiceover to kind of, you know, tell some sort of the... internal, reflective kind of things that wouldn't just come out in a scene of people, you know, just talking. And so there's a lot of interview stuff that I think, at least that part of the archive, at some point maybe, and we've got it all transcribed too. Like, there's this, again, start off as a photo book. So I've got this dream of, like, you know, doing like a photo book with, like, you know, quotes from them and images, and there's some other photography that I've done in North Philly. And so there's many stories. And I think, again, there's this idea of, like, there's the danger of the single story. Like, this is just one story of North Philly. Where are the other storytellers? There's other beautiful, different facets, important layers. And sometimes you don't want to kitchen sink it. You want to be focused. But then that just means, like, hey, we want this story and this story and this story and keep moving on that way.
Well, we did think about an update. Like, PJ is always saying that we need a part two, man. That's the first thing called him out.
10 more years.
Yeah, because, like, for instance, like, we do Freestyle Fridays at Temple University on their campus now. You know, so that's pretty cool at WRTI, where we interact with the college students, with the local neighborhood kids, or wherever they come from. You could be anybody, rap, sing, dance. Every other Friday, we do from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and that's really cool. So that's like out of the basement in the public, so to speak. So that's like when we started doing that, I was kind of nervous at first because I didn't want to take away from the authenticity of our Freestyle Fridays. Our Freestyle Fridays were really just so... the neighborhood guys that people were scared of could come and talk. We can all relate. We can powwow. We can sit down. Because the guys don't just come there to rap. Sometimes they come there to listen. Sometimes they come there just, I got a pool table. They'll play pool and talk. Or they'll, like, somebody might need to fill out a resume for an interview or, like, things like that, you know, email something. Like, it's like a
a community center in our basement, so to speak. And I was worried about taking that from the basement to WRTI because I know we couldn't do all that there. You know, now we just kind of like eat pizza the first couple minutes and then we let the guys go in and do what they do. But we still do the Freestyle Fridays at our home. And, you know, we base people coming off of who you know. It's not like you can be a total stranger and just pop up, you know, and just say, I'm coming to your Freestyle Friday. It's like, okay, maybe I'll talk to you on the internet for a little while because that's how most people connect with me. Or somebody, it's like somebody will bring a friend and I'll say, well, where do you know him from? And, you know, we'll talk like that. So it's like everybody kind of engages, you know, before they actually come to the studio. Like this one guy I'm talking to right now, he's actually from Africa and he hasn't come to the studio yet, but he just started communicating with me on the internet and he's showing me all these pictures and he has this rapper, he makes beats and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to engaging with him. So I think that'll be interesting. And, you know, that's one way we really connect. Like the studio is more than just hip hop. It's more than just coming in and rapping. And I don't care what you say for real on the microphone because you, really most 90% of the time, most of these guys are just relieving stress. It's one less reason for them to go outside and be angry at somebody because, like, I've had the guys say, you know, thanks, Quest, for just letting me just come here and just rap. And I'd be like, well, you know, we're just open to the public anyway, guys. And they'd be like, no, man, the other day, me and my wife had a big argument or me and my girlfriend or my kid made me so mad or my uncle's this or my aunt that. And I started realizing, wow, this is really cool. Like, people are really talking to me. Or they'll talk to PJ, like, because we have generations of rap now. I'm like a really old head to these guys now. Like, so my ideal of rap is not PJ's ideal of rap. So when the guys come in, yeah.
It's still rap, right. It's just different age ranges.
Right, like, exactly.
We got different styles. Sometimes they might not like our style, so they'll be like, turn that music off.
Yeah, so you get that in the studio, you know, the back and forth. Or I'll put on like that genre of music, and then we'll switch up to this one or whatever. Sometimes we have this old guy to come in, and he'll doo-wop while the rappers are rapping, you know. And it's like community engagement, but on a personal level, you know. And I think that really helps out a lot. I'm not saying everybody should start a studio, but since I've been doing it, it's been great. I haven't had any like major problems. When we first started, we did have the strangers. Like, this is what made us start really getting to know people. One time, a long time ago, and this is a long time ago, this is like the early 2000s, some guy came to the studio that was new. He came with one of our friends. When he left, what was the mayor?
John Timoney,
the police commissioner, knocked on our door and was like, hey, he knew my name. He knew everything about me. I'm like, wow.
He knew your nickname.
So when he came in, and he was like talking to me. And he was saying, this lady got carjacked for a car. And this was on the news and everything, but we didn't know because we were all in the studio just rapping, whatever. So after a while, they came back and knocked on the door and was like, you guys mind coming outside for a lineup? We're looking for a tall man, such and such.
Tall, light-skinned, 6 foot tall, bald-headed man. Why was I part of the lineup?
Yeah, they made her come out. They made everybody, male, female. We all standing out in the rain like, oh, my God, is this really happening? Hard. You know, so after that let us know, like, okay, so now I have the sign on the wall, like, Freestyle Friday's open to the public, whatever, blase, blase, and it says, don't do anything and come here, because we're tired of being in lineups, you know, that's like kind of like our little joke thing we put on there, but I have these rules about coming to the studio that I post, you can't smoke cigars in there, things like that, anything that'll offend somebody, we can't do in there at all, so... It's like pretty much anybody can come, but it's freedom of speech, though.
And
so
the biggest rule is, if you commit a crime, don't come here.
Right, exactly, because we're not hiding anybody. This is not a safe haven for doing anything wrong, you know. Because at one time, when it first started, our guys were bringing their guns, you know, and I was like, okay, we're going to take this gun. We don't need this in the studio. Like, what you going to do if it go off and hit somebody, you know? They entrusted me. Like, I actually have a locker. Like, I would, like, put the guns in the locker and lock them up. This was the trust that I was trying to build with these guys, you know, so... Imagine me like trying not to like tell on these guys. Like, I'm like, these guys got guns, man. I could take them off the street right now. But then what trust am I having with these guys to do that? And after a while, these guys stopped bringing the guns and they stopped doing what they were doing. And I started realizing, hey, this is really cool. Like, this is working. Hey, babe, guess what? John don't carry a gun no more. You know, it was really amazing to us. And like, we kind of like kept it up. And like, so it's been going really strong since like about 2000, actually, some year 2000.
Yeah, we started when I was pregnant with PJ.
Yep.
Yeah, question here.
Hi, so I have a question for PJ. If I had gone through the experience you had, I wouldn't want to be reminded of it.
So my question to you, you know, very respectfully is, isn't it hard for you to watch this film?
I watch this film a lot of times. Like, yeah. But it's like, I don't know. I feel like when you really face the problem instead of hiding from it, it's just like you just get immune to it. Because people, that's what a lot of people do. Like when they got problems, they hide from it. And I feel like my support system, that's what really helped me, because a lot of people don't even have a support system. Like, people don't even have two parents in their life. So I feel like I was real grateful with that. And then a movie, I'm thankful for John, too, because I feel like I didn't know it was going to be a movie. And yeah.
None of us did. It was like, this guy, really?
And then, like, when I was in 12th grade, that's when we, like, found out for real, like, all right, we about to go on tour, we about to go to Utah. And I never knew what Sundance was. And I graduated 2017. And I don't know, it was just tough, like, going on airplanes. I never did that before. And meeting different people, it opened my mind. And, like, it just was like, I feel like I was closed-minded, and I thought that everybody was the same. And I saw how different it was outside of Philly.
And we also wanted to control the narrative. I had been filming with them for about 5 years before, you know, PJ got shot, and, you know, local news was covering it. So, and they even, you know, and, you know, was it Channel 3, Todd Quinones or whatever? You know, and it's like, so there's a, I think they tried, but, like, you know, it was just more about the sensationalism of, like, she got shot, she lost her eye, they're going to have a block party. And the interview on the stoop, so that I filmed, so you see it in the film. Well, that stuff, what he was talking about, the neighborhood, like the social critique of the city, that was all cut out. So it was just about the tragedy of PJ. But their voices, what the message that they had was eliminated from that. And so, you know, part of this was, and it's hard, yeah, putting yourself out there, the vulnerability is, you know, really tough, I think, and really courageous. But the idea was, there's already a narrative that's out there. We want to show something that has all of the layers. And this isn't a family of victims, you know, sad, tragic victims. Like, these guys have a lot going on that you get to experience. And you get to experience kind of what the local news missed out on. But yeah, I wouldn't say that's an easy thing. It's hard to put yourself in front of there, up to all the judgments potentially that could come. Hopefully, you just fall in love with them and that this goes away, but you don't know. You don't know what people are bringing to a viewing experience, and if they're just going to use that to sort of, you know, reinforce whatever negative biases they have. But hopefully, if you come with an open mind, an open heart, and a little bit of love, that it could be a generative experience. And
it was actually my wife and I's idea that when PJ went through, or started going through that little episode she went through, we asked John to come film that. We wanted PJ to see her recovery. We didn't, because the first thing we kept getting is a whole bunch of promises, empty promises, and people saying they were going to do this for us and do that for us. And they kept promised PJ a trip to Disney World. The police promised her, like, iPads and things like this. And all these people kept coming with these things. We're going to help build, like, a community center. We're going to donate all this money to help you get back on your feet and things like that. None of that happened. But the only thing that did happen was that we had a friend with a camera that can show, like, film these things for us, so we can go back and look at it and say, look, PJ, this is where you started from. Look, the tragedy happened. Now you're stronger. Now you're even stronger. You're better. You're feeling stronger. You know, you're proud of yourself. You're somebody. You know, because the first thing you always hear, like, I don't know if you saw in the film where the lady said, you're pretty, you're still pretty, whatever. I don't know if you remember that scene. Like, PJ was really hot at that lady because she kept, like, insisting that she was pretty, but PJ said, I know I'm pretty, like, what's wrong with you? You know? So, like, she already felt empowered about herself, but the lady kept trying to reinforce her for that.
Mm-hmm. At the time, like me, I feel like I was always the type of person, like, I read between lines, like, and I don't know, I feel like I saw it like that in one way, but then again, I was trying to see it like that, instead of, like, because I don't know, when somebody telling you something, sometimes they mean the opposite, and I think too hard, and I'm thinking, she really saying I'm ugly now. Yeah, so that's how I really was thinking at that time.
Yeah, it was just a building moment for us, and with John's camera, like, and being a good friend, like I said, John and I became friends. It wasn't like like this random guy just said, can I hang around you? Like, right, he built trust within me, the guys at the studio, because, you know, I'm actually 14 years older than John. He's like the same age as the guys that were coming to the studio. So it was like, okay, I watched those guys bond, because the guys in the studio don't like nobody. It's like the commercial Mikey, he didn't eat anything. You know, that's how the guys were at the studio. We didn't like, they thought John was the cops every day. Every time he came over for the first couple of times, they left. Then as they seen, I kept talking to him and associating with him. They started hanging around, like kind of watching us from a distance, watching how we reacted with each other. And the trust built real fast, you know.
You guys kind of touched on it quite a bit in this last answer, but I was wondering for John, you said earlier that it was originally a photo shoot and then it turned into a film. So what was like the turning point or the pivotal moment in your mind where you were like, okay, I know now that I want to turn this into a film or I want to make this into a film? And I also wanted to know specifically, was it always going to be this family or did you like narrow it down from other families mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. how did that process yeah. work?
So once we did photo for a year and a half. It started with just like a one-off photo shoot. Come to the studio and we want to get some pictures to promote, you know, the studio, promote the artist. And so like, all right, cool, whatever. I mean, then I just, when I saw, experienced the studio in action, I was like really blown away. Like it just was the same vibe. It's like, it's just a do-it-yourself DIY punk scene, just like really grassroots, passionate. And I was just like, whoa, I want to contribute to this community. These guys are awesome. And so I just kind of kept coming around. And definitely some folks I would show up and they were gone. But there's other folks that were like, whatever, I'm going to roll the dice on them. Quest rolling the dice on them. So we'll see. And I kept coming around and, you know, eventually Price started calling me Peter Parker. And so once I got a nickname and everyone else, that's like, I didn't know anyone's real name for, you know, years,
yeah.
You know, but it's like, once I got that, I felt like I was in. But then we just connected and I heard about the paper route and I sort of was working construction at the time and trying to do art photography stuff on the side, you know, so I had like the working life and the creative passion. And so when I heard about the paper route, I just really related to that having to balance the two. And so I asked, hey, why don't we do a photo essay on, the paper route, the photo, the studio, kind of combine those two worlds. And then that just led to me crashing over at night, got to know the family, and then realized, oh, the family is the essential piece of this. And I became a dad, like, you know, in year two. So then that really kind of hit home, like, whoa, he's not juggling just job and, like, passion. Like, there's people that he's responsible for. Now I'm responsible for a baby. This is really intense. Anyway, long story short, we did that for about a year and a half. And the idea wasn't to abandon the photo thing and make a movie. So I was doing both. But then as the years went on, I was learning how to make that transition, because transitioning from stills to motion and sound, it's big. It's, you know, you have to really think differently about how you're approaching it. And I could get deeper into that, but I won't. But eventually, like I was doing both worse and I had to make a choice. And so maybe a couple years later, I abandoned the photo stuff for the most part and just focused on the documentary as we saw that. Forget if that's all the points, but yeah.
I think I got a question real quick. Is anybody in the film here? Like, do you do film yourself? I noticed one thing that John had a problem with that I don't know if you're going to face this eventually. Like, starting to love your subjects. Like, our bond became close, so I noticed his editing process, like, took longer than, like, when he talked about it, you know. He kept saying that, you know, I'm not going to be able to edit the film. I'm like, well, I can help you. I've seen the film. I know what I'm doing. It's about me, you know. But I come to realize, like, I understood why it was hard for him to do, like, editing at the time, because you become so close with your subjects. You want to put every nook and cranny in there to tell the story. And like you said, he only had, like, the full-length film was an hour and what, how long?
You guys saw the 82-minute. There's another one that's an hour and 45
minutes. 45
minutes. But that's still a lot less than 400 hours.
Right.
And so yeah. But yeah, you need an editor who has some distance, because mm-hmm. the editor is sort of stands between all of us who've like lived this life together. Mm-hmm. These guys more so than me, but I was there with the camera, and connects to the viewer who knows nothing, maybe doesn't care, maybe is actually antagonistic, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what does that viewer who knows nothing, doesn't care, what do they need, and in what order do they need it to care? Because I already care. These guys already care. So it was up to me. I would have made, you know, a 20-hour film that maybe wouldn't have, you know, been as powerful as this. And mm-hmm. so, but that's, the editor does their thing and then brings it back to us. And then we reflect back. And it's a really important collaboration. And you need distance and you need a team. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just sort of, filming is truly a collaborative process.